Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
King Darius, son of Hystaspes, had been greatly incensed against the Athenians because of their raid on Sardis. But when news reached him of the battle fought at Marathon, his wrath was still more kindled. And he pressed on all the more with preparations for war against Greece. He lost no time in sending messengers to every city calling for the raising of an army, requiring of each a far greater number of men than ever before. Ships of war, food, horses, transports besides. This levy kept Asia in travail for 3 years, the best men being taken up with the war on Greece and preparations for it. And in the fourth year, the Egyptians, brought into subjection by Cambyses, revolted against the Persians, and Darius put them down. Before Darius could leave on his Marathon battle, he had to proclaim a successor according to Persian law. You couldn't leave without doing so. He was pressured by his court to do so in about 500 or so BC, 490, 480 actually. Before he had declared his mind, he was approached by his sons. His elder son said he should be king because he was the eldest. Xerxes, his second oldest, claimed that he should be king because he was born to Darius once he had taken the kingship. But his older brother had been born while he was yet a subject. He finagled his way to get the kingship. Xerxes was not even the first choice. This is from Herodotus' histories. And I bring that up again tonight because I want us to talk about that a little more. That when we see, as we read, I want us to finish chapter 1 tonight and talk about Darius a little as well, Xerxes' father. Because I want us to understand when we see that Xerxes is boiling with rage, it goes back to a small man who even at the start wasn't the first choice to be king. But he made it so. He was looked over by his brothers, and he was held to a standard that his father set that he could never really live up to. And it's a lesson for us, I think, as we approach tonight. Now, and these two pictures I have up here, I've had up each week on either side of Esther going through the king's court. Actually, it's not Xerxes. That is Darius, we think. His father. It's hard to tell with the various reliefs throughout that Persepolis and Susa and his palaces. We think this is Darius. Xerxes would pose in a similar way. They had the big beards, which was a symbol of virility. It was about sex and lust and things to present their power and pride. Holding a scepter there, which would have been colored gold. And we'll read about that in Esther, the golden scepter. It was very important. He had to go to that. Tonight, we kind of read over the first 8 verses, and we're getting into the text now a little deeper. And we're going to read the next half, 9 to 22. And each week going forward, we're on track now. We'll probably do about a chapter a night. Sometimes if the chapters are longer, we'll split them over 2 weeks, but a couple of the chapters are short. It's a short book. But what we're going to do, I want us to explore these questions in a little more context historically. To remind us of a couple things I mentioned last week that I want us to maybe meditate on as well. But 3 questions I want us to think about as we read in a few moments. Why the banquet? Why did we have this banquet? Who was Vashti? Okay. And why was Xerxes wrong to do what he did? Maybe he wasn't. We're going to read that in just a bit if you'll have that text open. But as a reminder, and the linguistics are going to come up tonight, because remembering the name, Xerxes, the transliteration of Greek from Hebrew, Persian, to Greek, to English was rough. The Greeks, we know it was Xerxes, again, the Lion King. We're going to apply those rules in a bit. I think that cut off at the bottom. But we read the first few verses last week. And just as a recap, I show this not, again, just to place it in time. It does. It does prove to us when it happened, yes. but it also is to provide a scope. And again, I remind you, I don't know if, can you think of a book in the Bible where we spend a chapter and a half before we even mention a godly person, right? There, we don't get to Esther and Mordecai till about mid-chapter 2. And when the Bible speaks, we listen. So we're learning here about from Xerxes and Vashti about what not to do. Men and women in power, especially men at this point, I think, pay attention because we see what potential and privilege we're all afforded in positions of power, men and women. And we see in Xerxes' life and his father as well, he listened to the wrong women when he shouldn't have, and he didn't listen to the right women when he should have. I mention this because I want us to remember at this party, be thinking about the banquet. I've hinted some of this already and mentioned a couple, but I mentioned this, that it's important God tells us that he ruled over 127 satraps or provinces from India to Kush. He was in Susa. So we have representatives from all these places. It's in 483 BC. I mentioned that before. There's the empire once again. And I want us to remember the palace of Persepolis was the main palace. This was Daddy's palace, okay? This was Darius's palace. Xerxes had a mini palace here. But he concluded the construction at Susa so he could have his own winter palace. And a lot of our story takes place here and over at Sardis and getting into Greece. So, and I want us to remember, look at all these places. These were divided up by peoples, okay? The party we're about to read about had representatives from these places, okay? This was a massive banquet, and we won't have time for all the, love to look at all the historical evidence. We have lots of evidence from them and the Babylonians holding parties like this where they would be massive for a purpose. Again, lots and lots of people here from across the empire. It's another way of looking at it. So what we're about to read, when it says he throws the banquet to review, I want to ask this question, and I think I hinted last time, and I've highlighted some clues, but this is important as we finish chapter 1 in a bit. We see in verses 3 to 5, we have a banquet where it tells us military leaders from Persia and Media and the princes and the nobles of all the provinces were present. They met for 180 days, which is about 6 months, right? And then had a party of 7 days after for everyone. So if you remember, and based on that slide, when we can answer this with some history too. Why is he throwing this banquet? If someone wants to answer, why do you remember it? Why is he throwing a banquet in verse 3? What do you think? Planning a war. This is big. That is exactly what's happening. And he is planning this war to pick up where his father left off. And as he's planning this war in Persia, they would have a massive military conference. Think of Huntsville in a way, but imagine mingling. It's all the contractors, it's all the govy folk, you know. It's a show of power, and he's needing backing. This is Xerxes' first couple years of reign. He's trying to do a couple of things. I'm in power now. I'm as good as my dad. I'm better than my dad. We're going to do great things. And the king had a lot of power. He was the king of kings, but Persia was a little different. They weren't a democracy. Xerxes could easily be assassinated, okay? We see this later in history. He is killed later by someone, many years later. But we see Xerxes has to solidify his people, okay? It's not a done deal, okay? He's got to show these contractors, essentially, these other people from these 127 satraps, buy into my vision, and I'll make you all nobles, right? I'll give you all wealth. Got to prove it. So, and we see, I won't read this necessarily, but we see again, this very event is confirmed in the Herodotus histories that I just read from. And, pages and pages, you'd be surprised, dozens of pages that precede the beginning of Esther when Xerxes gets these people together. We know he had the campaign when he first became king to put down revolts in Egypt and Babylonia. And even Herodotus tells us there was a massive gathering of the army in Susa in 483 whilst Xerxes threw a banquet. So we know that happened. And this is where he goes to war. He is putting down these rebellions in his first year or two. And then his advisors come to him, and Xerxes is doing well. And they remind him, we want you to go to war. How is it? Does anybody know? Maybe from history, or can you remember? How is it they convinced him to go to war in the first place? What do you think? Any ideas, or anybody who's read or seen the movies or anything? How is it they convinced him to go to war? What do you think? One of the reasons has to do with something I mentioned, back to Darius. Most of you may have heard, I read this from the Battle of Marathon. Does anybody know what happened at the Battle of Marathon? Ever heard of that? Anybody give me a short version? What happened at Marathon? So this is where we get the Nike myth as well. Anybody wear your Nike shoes? This is where it comes from. It happened, but it was a little mythologized. His father, Darius, was almost as good as his grandfather, Cyrus. He expanded all the way to Greece, but the pesky Greeks, who were not Greeks yet, they were just Greek city-states, started galvanizing, right? They were doing a little something called democracy, ruled by the people, and that didn't sit well with Darius. Darius pushed a little far, and he was actually defeated at Marathon, and that's where we have the Greek run back so many miles. He passes out and says victory, which is Nike in Greece. Anyway, but that's sort of a myth-type thing, but it did kind of happen. This is where Xerxes goes and fights the 300 Spartans I mentioned in a little bit, because what's going to happen is Darius failed to conquer the Greeks, and people began to grouse and have rumors, okay? So we see from history leading into Esther 1, a lot of Xerxes' base were starting to think, well, maybe Xerxes is going to be like his dad. Is he going to push too far? Is he going to fail? But Xerxes gets surrounded by bad people. All these names we read in the first four or five verses. They're his buddies, and they want to push him so they can take Greece, right? They want a piece of it. They think if they can just push him, they can do this, okay? And probably should have left well enough alone. And right here we see, this is a map that shows Marathon back in a few years before this chapter starts, when his father, if this makes sense to you all, this is Persia, and now, you know, this is where all the war takes place. Xerxes is way over here when our story takes place, and he's going to push and leave the palace all the way over here, and his father tried to take Marathon and failed, right? Xerxes is going to come across after this banquet, and he's going to defeat the 300 Spartans, but it never gets better after that. He loses every battle after that, and he's going to come home, make a pit stop, and there's 7 years that pass, I don't know if you know this or not, between chapter 1 and chapter 2, verse about 5. A lot of time passes, okay? Well, look at that. But Xerxes is going to go off and do his thing. So going back to review kind of just the high points from last week's verses 6 to 9, we looked at those verses that describe the banquets. And the things I want you to pick up on, this is all verifiable. This was a massive party, and they would have these. They liked the colors blue and white and purple. Lots of stones were colored that way. He pulled out all the stoppings, right? Cords, we see this mentioned in the Bible, marble pillars. There's a website, Getty Images, or the Getty Institute, if you're interested, about 2 years ago, put together something called Persepolis Reimagined. If you want to look at it online, it's pretty interesting, where they've reconstructed the palace. You can kind of scroll through the virtual. It's not AI created as much as it's using tools to rebuild it, and you can see this. It really brings it to life. They drank out of golden vessels it sells. And at banquets like this, when you're trying to win the military and the nobles, you have to prove that you're super rich. It tells us in verse 8 in the text, and drinking was according to this edict. There is no compulsion, for the king had given orders to all the staff of his palace to do as each man desired. This was different. In Persian culture, the king would often tell people, you can have this much, you can drink, but there's a limit I'm going to set so we don't get crazy, okay? But at the big banquets, you'd let them get loosened up, right? He let them have at it. I'm not going to stop you, okay? So we know this from history, too, and I won't for time's sake read, but Herodotus comments on that as well, and I think I mentioned part of this before, but he says that whenever they run into the Persians make fun of the Greeks because the Persians do this weird thing called a multi-course meal where they bring out appetizers and then an entree, and then they bring out about 8 courses of desserts, and then they bring out wine and a little more wine, and they just keep going. And they're very quiet when they eat because they eat and eat and eat until they get drunk, and then they get loose, right? And the Greeks would say, you know, the Persians make fun of us because they said our desserts must not be very good because if they were, we would keep eating, right? And the Persians loved it, and this party just let them go. And they would break, right? But this was a 6-month party. They would have different nobles come in. They would party every day. They're planning, they're making allegiances, alliances. and we see Queen Vashti enter the picture. We know that it says in verse 9 that Queen Vashti also gave a feast for the women in the palace that belonged to King Xerxes. Notice it says the palace that belonged to King Xerxes, not hers and Xerxes' palace. That's important, I think, in a minute. So who is Vashti? There's a few things from history, and this is a bust at the bottom that they've discovered that's, I think, in the British Museum. I'm not sure if it's, they don't know if it's Vashti. It's from around this time. Esther, is it just a noble woman? Or maybe it's a beardless man. They're not really sure. But this is the problem. We don't have a lot of evidence from this period outside of artifacts. But a couple things about Vashti I want to challenge you to think about. And there are different takes on this. Some people think she's Esther. Maybe you're one of those people. Persian history tells us that he only had one queen, and her name was Amestris. Okay? Some of you may have heard of that, Amestris. I'm going to try to sell you on the idea this is the same person. So if you do a lot of research on this and just look at a lot of the sources over the years, Bible commentaries and even secular, I think that this is the same person. There's a reason why. Those Hebrew to Greek names don't translate well. Vashti, if you didn't know, I don't think it was really a name. I mean, it was a name and that it was a title. Okay, the same way that Esther is not her real name. Vashti is a Persian and later Hindu word. Vashishta or Vashti means beautiful or desired. Make sense? It's really a title. It says precious one, beautiful one. Xerxes, you know, they just did that. I don't know if that was her name. I think her name was close to that or something. We know what it was spelled like, and this kind of cut it off. But Amestris, again, is the only queen listed. Now, Amestris, and the reason we think, I think most scholars agree that she is Vashti and not Esther, is because of what we know from Greek and the translation between these languages. Remember that in Esther, we're looking at a Hebrew book translated into Greek, translated into English. And the linguistics was called a labial language, the lips, you know, using the M, V, and W. Those sounds were not translated the same. So what we have, the name really would read in English more like V-S-T-I, Vashti, Vashti, Vashti. How do we get to Amestris? Well, what most scholars think is we go from Vashti, and when the Hebrews would have seen that, they often would translate that V as a W. Okay? It'd be Vashti or Vashti. When the Greeks got a hold of it, Herodotus says they saw it and they thought it was an M, okay? And turned it into an Amushti, Amashti. See, we're getting there? And we have linguistics about this that you can read about. So we see Vashti become Vashti or Vashti, Vashti, which becomes Masti or Misti. And then the Greeks, when they would transliterate, would often add an A sound to make it flow better. You wouldn't start with a hard M. That's crass. So they added an Am. So then it became Amesti, Amesti. And much like the Greeks' names, they would add an ES or an IS to the end. That's why you have a lot of these names in Greece that end with that, which was taken to Amestris, okay? So I know I sound a little bit like the guy with the red yarn making it look on the wall. But this is kind of how scholars think it happened. And I think you can see it maybe, kind of, sort of. So Vashti, we think, is Amestris. And that holds up for a few reasons. Vashti's about to get banished. In history, the Persian conquerors always took their wives. They were different. They took their wives with them on war campaigns. Guess who is not in the only campaign that Xerxes does between 483 to 479 BC, guess who's not listed as being with him? Amestris. It's mentioned that she has been done something and she's no longer with him. It's pretty cool. So we can kind of tell that this is probably her. Okay, so it kind of goes along. Any thoughts? I'll stop there. Anybody heard anything different? Or does that sound close to you or had a different take on that? Vashti, who she is? I'm interested. So a couple things about banquets. Since we read those first 9 verses last week, I want us to understand the Persians had a tradition called razum bazum, okay? These are words that meant fight and feast, and this was carried on into the Parthian and Sasanian empires as well as the Islamic empires that took on later. It was called fight and feast. So they would have these battles, they would fight, they would feast because they're preparing for war. And they drank out of these special cups called ritons. This is what's being referred to in the Bible when it talks about gold and silver chalices. They were made out of animals. They were not made out of animals. They were made out of, to look like animals. And they would hold them like drinking horns, right? And again, they had affinities. Now, they actually would have their women, a lot of times, eat alongside them at banquets. But when it was a big banquet, like a military, when the wives had a separate one, think of it like the queen was in charge of, it's kind of like when college football recruits go to a college, you know, and then like the coach's wife takes them and feeds them or something. But it's kind of like that, you know, you have the queen would have, kind of host the wives, right, alongside the concubines. They would have these conferences along the way. And some of the foods, a couple of these are just modern pictures, but, you know, I want us to remember this is, they didn't really have sugar this time importing. They used honey, rose water, beautiful desserts like baklava. Alexander the Great actually comments later about the dish on the bottom left was made from an ancient recipe. They had gold filigree on their food. I like the one at the bottom right there. That's a riton, like an antelope. They would pour it. You know, you can see these extravagant. And Xerxes would pick these animals to represent, and the medals he picked, if you look at history, they would represent what he took from each country, right? Basically telling them, I own you. You have to come fight for me. The image in the middle there, I don't know if you've seen these before, but they actually sort of invented refrigerators. Some of these, they've discovered these little beehive things. They had their own, they would refrigerate things. So they'd dig out tunnels beneath, and they sort of were using convection, and they had a way of keeping food cool by the way they would make these domes. They were very advanced. So Xerxes was busting out not the ice cream, but the chili food, the cold stuff, excuse me. So the banquets that we read about in verses 1 to 9, they would last 6 to 8 months. And conveniently, the Persian New Year, which Lunar New Year is right now, if you look at some Asian cultures, Persian New Year at this time was about March, end of February, March. And at this point, Xerxes is doing a couple of things. He's hosting the New Year party. His birthday's around this time. He's bringing them to war. So he has the biggest party he could possibly do, right? So that overlaps. So I want us to think now, keeping that in mind, that Xerxes' advisors have told him, hey, in history, what we have, if we look at Herodotus and Caesius and some other history historians, they tell us that, you know, they really came to Xerxes and said, hey, you know, your father did this. He almost did it. But, you know, you're not your dad. It's okay. You can stay here, right? So we see a little taunting. He kind of plays on Xerxes' ego, gets him lubricated. You know, they start kind of taunting. So, and that matches the biblical story pretty well. So let's talk about Xerxes getting heated now. All this is building up to Xerxes hosting a party. So if you'd read along with me in chapter 1, verse 10. I'm going to read to verse 18. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine. This is the seventh day after it's over. They would cap off the big feast. Basically what happened is 6 months of partying. They came to an agreement, we'll fight for you. Then there's a seven-week after party, right, where all the commoners come, everybody. When the heart of the king was merry with wine, i.e. wasted, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagatha, Zethar, and Carcas, the seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown, or headdress. Some of you may see that, but I believe crown is the translation. In order to show the peoples and the princes her beauty, for she was lovely to look at. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command, delivered by the eunuchs. At this, the king became enraged, and his anger burned within him. Then the king said to the wise men who knew the times, for this was the king's procedure toward all who were versed in law and judgment, the men next to him being Karshina, Shethar, Admata, Tarshish, Meres, Marcena, and Memucan, which, by the way, next week I'll show you a tablet that has most of these guys' names on it, okay, on the screen. The seven princes of Persia and Media. So here's our seven princes who saw the king's face and sat first in the kingdom. According to the law, what is to be done to Queen Vashti? Because she has not performed the command of King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, delivered by the eunuchs. Then Memucan said in his presence of the king and the officials, not only against the king has Queen Vashti done wrong, but also against all the officials and all the peoples who are in all the provinces of King Xerxes. For the queen's behavior will be made known to all women, causing them to look at their husbands with contempt, since they will say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, and she did not come. This very day, the noble women of Persia and Media, who have heard of the queen's behavior, will say the same to all the king's officials, and there will be contempt and wrath in plenty. I'll go ahead and finish out here. If it please the king, let a royal order go out from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it may not be repeated or appealed, that Vashti is never again to come before King Xerxes, and let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So when the decree made by the king is proclaimed throughout all his kingdom, for it is vast, all women will give honor to their husbands, high and low alike. This advice pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as Memucan proposed. He sent letters to all the royal provinces, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language, that every man he master be master in his own household and speak according to the language of his people. This was common. Xerxes would send decrees in the language of their people. That was different than the Babylonians and captors. He would often put it in two or three languages. So at this point, a couple things I'll bring up, kind of a symmetry between him and his dad. I'll ask a question if we have a couple minutes to, if you want to respond to any of these, I'll give you a second and just give you my thoughts. But out of what I just read, does anyone have any thoughts? I want you to notice, first of all, number one, I should say one, two, and three, but who does Xerxes turn to when Vashti refuses? Do you notice? Who is it that it says he turns to after she says no? Who's he talked to? The wise men? Okay. Turns to his wise men. And why do you think Xerxes does get so angry? What goes through your head? Why is he so mad that she didn't come? Embarrassed? That's interesting. And we think about why Vashti refuses. So a couple things. Let's go through this. First of all, the wise men. This is kind of interesting. And I think this is something I think we'll close the book with. Thinking about all these things that carry through. But, you know, the wise men, hakamim is the Hebrew word. That sort of chopped it up a little. That's my fault. Hakamim is the Hebrew word. These were the masters, maybe astrologists, law and justice. The Greek word for them is magoi or magoi. Does that sound familiar to another name? Magi. We're going to see them pop up at a birth later, right? So this is where these cultures come from. God's working here, right? God has this culture that's open to writing down all these. You know, they were the Magi would keep all the traditions of all these people Persia captured. Might as well learn from them. How do you think they kept that tradition alive? Couldn't do it if the Jews weren't there, right? So again, we're seeing how God's going to keep things going. now, as far as the second one, why does Xerxes get angry? Well, embarrassed, his pride is hurt, and he looks weak, and his family history is not great. We'll get to that. And Vashti refuses because of, I would say, two reasons. Everybody says modesty, and I think that's part of it. You can't ask your wife to do that in front of a bunch of people. It's just a no, that's a non-starter. And it does mean that in the translation. It means come out with your crown on and nothing else, okay? He wanted her to parade around. That's what he wanted. I've read commentaries trying to lighten it up. It's not what happened. He wanted her out there, and they were drunk. Who knows what was going to happen? Now, this is a problem because she says no. Xerxes should know better, and he should, because Persian history didn't allow this, okay? He wasn't supposed to do this. He was immodest, and he's overstepping what his grandfather set up. Cyrus established an empire where women actually had pretty good rights, okay? During his grandfather's time, they could own property. They owned businesses. They had jobs. This was way progressive for the time. But as time went on, Darius was not quite his father, and Xerxes was not quite his father. And I'll mention a couple of things about Darius. The reason I mention about this, about his pride was hurt, he flies off the handle because, I mentioned Darius earlier, because there were people rumoring about, Darius has two bad encounters with foreign women and banquets that the story never left, and this sort of hung over Xerxes. And what happened is, Darius, again, much like his father, pushed to the west, went a little too far, probably should have left Greece alone, didn't, got killed. His son takes over, and people start saying, well, you know, it's okay, you know, your dad couldn't do it either. The thing about Darius is there is an encounter, a famous myth or story that happens too with Darius. They had their superstitions too. Darius supposedly had gone against this queen named Queen Nitocris, was famously put down in Babylon. It was a famous queen, and Darius had a reputation for being greedy. This is a steely with Nitocris' name. This was a story where it involved a queen who was sort of a boogeyman for them. Darius had tried to put down an empire. This queen named Nitocris, who was in Babylon, supposedly was a queen that lived in ancient Egypt, that supposedly this sort of lived forever, could control the water. It had all these strange mythological things. And upon death, she had herself buried and warned that if any king tried to take her treasure, if they were worthy, they could, and if not, they should leave it alone. Well, Darius kind of breaks in, and he finds no treasure, and he gets cursed, rumor is. He says, hey, it's like a mummy curse, right? And they sort of tell him, hey, you're greedy, you get nothing. And this didn't sit well with the people. It was sort of a bad omen. And so Darius dies soon after. So we have kind of some spookiness there in their superstitions. But Xerxes, still thinking about this, there were a couple of things that happened after this. They weren't supposed to marry non-Persians. Okay, when his father Darius was on campaign, there's a story about him, and I'll just give you the summary, where he runs into a city he's taken over, and he sees a woman who's carrying some water, and she's very pretty. And he basically tells the brothers to bring her to me, takes her for himself. And he winds up making him one of his wives. The Persians don't do that, they said, except for when they did. Cyrus didn't do that. The worst one happens after this, and this is what I submit to you is what makes Xerxes so angry. Because in his mind, he has to be thinking, not this time. Because his father famously had sent a general to Greece where they had taken over a village, and they got drunk, and they demanded the Greeks give them their women. And they said, no, we won't do that. And they said, well, we got drunk, bring them out so we can have the spoils. Well, the Greeks say, okay. And what they do, it's kind of funny in a way. They go, and this really happened, they go and they dress up most of their men as women after the Persians are drunk and send the men to them. Say, fine. And the Persians take them to their tents, and then the women pull out their knives and kill all of the Persians, okay? Kind of a, Monty Python almost thing. But this is insulting, right? They kill him, and then I think all but two people, and one of the Greeks that are left say, go back and tell your master what's going to happen, right? See, this was an insult, and Darius is mocked for this. He was killed by men dressed as women. How dare you? And this sits over him too. So, this was at a banquet that they were supposed to be a breaking bread type thing. And that's happening here. And Xerxes has to be thinking, I will not be humiliated by a woman. Even then, it was a woman dressed as a man, right? Or a man dressed as a woman. But if we think about that and we read verses 19 to 21, which I know we've kind of looked at, think about what we just read here. Because in verse 19, there's a few things it says. First of all, they say, if it pleases the king, issue a royal decree. Number one, Vashti is never to enter in your presence. Number two, let the king give that position to someone else. Now, the questions now are, I was thinking about this. You think of times in the Bible when people mess up and just double down and make another bad decision and it's worse? Now, think about that. They did wrong. I think of things like Pharaoh, number one, when they enslaved the Hebrews because of fear, right? Hey, we've got to enslave them. There's a lot of them, lest they rise up. Hey, David, he likes Bathsheba. Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to make sure I can double down. I'm going to have Uriah killed. We see Xerxes doubling down here, breaking his own tradition, when he could have just probably apologized, because he didn't really have a right to do this. So I think for time, I'll just kind of mention these things. When an issuing a royal decree happened for Persians, this was a big deal. You may have heard this from history, but the king's laws could not be revoked. So once a king made a law, that's why it says in Esther, it will see a few times, says, hey, once I make this, you can't repeal it. The way they got around it, and we see this in the other histories, there was an example of one of Xerxes' uncles who ruled a satrap who wanted to marry his sister. And he basically came and they said, you can't do that. That's weird, even for them. And he said, well, I want to. And they said, well, is there a law against this? Well, specifically, there's no law that says you can't. There is a law that says you can do what you want. So he says, we'll go with that one. So they would find ways around it, see? And we'll see that in Esther as the story goes. Xerxes has to be clever with the law because he was subject to it as well. And one of the laws is that you could not do to Vashti what he did. Vashti was not just queen. She was the heir, the mother of his heir. Okay, there were different women. What you didn't do was take the mother of your child and do that. This is Xerxes breaking tradition. So I want us to remember that. It's more than just modesty. Xerxes is messing up even in pagan tradition. And I want us to remember this, because I've seen historians critique this part of the story, to say that, well, if that is a mistress, and she was banished, how come we see her pop up in history later? Easy. Because I want us to remember, just because he banished her from the presence of the king, that phrase does not mean banished from the land. If you look at other Persian literature, it basically means you've been demoted, okay? You're no longer number one. You may be the mother of my child, but often they would put them away like a dowager. So either, most likely, Vashti, or a mistress, I think, was either banished to a foreign land, which probably wasn't true, because she was the daughter of a famous family in Persia. You didn't do that. You're breaking your military alliance. This is not a love story, remember? This is not a love story. These are bad people. Or she was sent to one of the other three palaces. That's what they would do. They played the shell game with the wives they were unhappy with. If you didn't like this wife, you stuck her in Sardis, you lived in Susa. If she came to Susa, you went here. So they would do that and move the women around. So they weren't exactly as progressive as they let on. But I think also we read in Esther in chapter 2, and we'll get into that next week, when Esther is crowned, we see her move from the house of the second women to the house of the high women. Xerxes had layers to his concubines. He went through a level up process, you know? And likely Vashti was sent to a lower house, okay? And we kind of know that because in history we see when Xerxes, there's an account of Xerxes coming back from war, and a mistress sends Xerxes a coat to wear, and he loves it, and he starts to think about warming up to her. And Xerxes makes a mistake and gives the coat to one of his concubines. A mistress finds out and has the concubine killed, okay? But he can't get rid of a mistress in Vashti because she's bloodline, right? But he can put her in the little house up back, right? And that's kind of what we have, a broken family. So we see in this verse 2 where it says, give her to someone else, her position. Can he do that? Well, one thing I'll say is this is another thing Xerxes can't do, really. Persian tradition says they're supposed to marry only Persians. He's not really supposed to marry someone like Esther, which he will, and elevate her like he does. But he does, and God's going to use that. And I put this quote, basically the Greeks say that they say that we're only Persians, but basically they conquer everybody and say, you're Persians now, we can marry, right? So they were very loose with this. A couple of things we see that echo this chapter as well, and I'll bring up more next week. There were some things discovered several years ago called the Fortification Tablets of Persia. We don't have a lot of records about Persia, but we have their receipts, if that makes sense. They kept good records that didn't burn on cuneiform. They would tell us things like how many people were at the palace on this date and that. So I want to put this here to show you that the women of his time, Xerxes is kind of destroying a good thing for the women here. Many women, such as Artabana, was in the documents. She was the mother of Darius. She owned the biggest wine and grain business in Persia. If you've seen the sequel to 300, Artemisia of Caria, it's a woman. It was Xerxes' best naval commander was a woman. And ironically, when Xerxes goes to war and loses later, before chapter 2, she's the only commander he doesn't listen to. He's going to attack the Greeks with his naval fleet. How dare those Spartans, right? He comes in to get them, and Artemisia tells him, don't. We've won. Starve them out. If you go in there and fight on their land, we're going to lose. His other generals, these guys here, that have told him, let's go to war, they said, let's go, let's go. Come on, what are you, you know? They start questioning his manhood, so he goes. Artemisia is the only one who lives. His other guys wind up dying, some of these guys. So we see again where Xerxes just doesn't know when to listen to the right people. A couple of notes as we close. I wanted to explain kind of the women a little more. Now, this is something I want you to think about this week. In Persian culture, This was the ranking of women. They went all the way from slaves, laborers, businesswomen. They served in the military. There were nobles. And then you had what were called the lesser wives or concubines. This is what Esther was. And then you had the king's family. Someone called the principal wife, which is a mistress. If you had the king's child, you were elevated. And then the mother of the king, okay? So when we see the word queen in Esther, unfortunately the Hebrew word is melakah, which just means wife of the king or queen. Does that make sense? There's a difference in saying queen regnant, which means like Queen Elizabeth, she rules on her own, versus the queen who is married, the woman who's married to the king. Does that make sense? She wasn't queen on herself. So Vashti had power, and he really wasn't supposed to put her away, and now he's going to put Esther up there. He kind of can, but Esther can never really be that. But Esther's going to use that to her advantage, right? Esther knows how pretty she is. She knows how smart she is. And she knows she has a chance here to be in his ear because Vashti's been sent away. And she's going to have that privilege. Again, Queen Melakah or Melech, the word Melech for king. So King Xerxes, Melech Xerxes. Melakah is what we see. With Esther, we're going to see that in chapter 2 next week, made her in place of Vashti. So I want you to remember that and think about that. It's not a conflict. He does put her in her place, but Esther and Vashti are different people, right? Esther's going to be a concubine queen that's going to be lifted up above all the others, okay? And I think we'll stop there. This is exactly where we're going to be. Next week, we're going to read chapter 2, and we're going to go through, finally, we're now at the part where Esther and Mordecai enter the series, are the story, and Xerxes is about to leave, and we'll go through how Esther and Mordecai kind of get in the positions they're going to be in, and I'll show you some more evidence how we know that that happened. Thank you all so much. I'll see you next week.